first section.
No. Wait, we're checking the thing. You're going to have to do whatever. Wait till I give you the signal.
But did we go for 10 seconds?
Uh-uh. No. It has to go to number 10 on this. Now.
Pittsburgh section. National Council of Jewish Women. Oral History 2. Barbara Burns and Hope Layton. Interviewing Dr. Edwin Fisher. July 28th, 1997. Dr. Fisher, would you please tell us your birth date?
September 2nd, 1923.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
When we had our interviewing session the last time, Hope and I played back the tape and realized that there were some items that we need to ask you before we get on to new topics. So if you don't mind, when you mentioned the Y team, Y is the acronym for what? Can you play the Y team?
I played the YMHA basketball.
Oh.
As kids, we had our team, A team, which was very good. We started playing together when we were 14 years old. We stayed together, and then we were the basketball team for Taylor Lowry's High School when we became 16, 17.
And in the YMWHA, mm-hmm. What does that stand for?
Young Men's and Women's Hebrew Association.
Thank you very much.
That's the forerunner of the JCC.
Also, we neglected to ask you what year you graduated from Taylor Allardyce High School.
In February 1941.
And you talked about Miss Wadenknecht. How in the world do you spell Wadenknecht? Do you have any idea?
W-A-G-E-N-K-N-E-C-H-T. That's the way it sounds.
Uh-huh. It's close. You also mentioned Miss Struve.
Yeah, that was Struve.
Good, thank you.
They were both German.
Yes, interesting. Also, you mentioned your wife's brother, Carol's brother. Is he younger or older than she?
No, he's younger. I think I said that. If I recall.
And would you mind telling us how you spell your children's names and telling us their birthdays?
Marjorie, M-A-R-J-O-R-I-E.
Marjorie,
M-A-R-J-O-R-I-E.
Marjorie.
Simple name. September 10th of the year before, 43 years ago. So that would be 54, it's about right, 1954.
Mm-hmm.
Abby, A-B-B-E. And she would be, it's in June. I don't remember. But she would be, it would be June, and it would be 40 years ago. So that would be 57. June something.
The spelling of your son-in-law's name, Alan Baum, is it A-L-L-E-N or?
A-L-A-N. That's okay. The difference.
And Baum is B-A-U-M?
Yes, it's okay. Not B-O-M-B.
All right. We spoke of your brother, but as we listened to the tape, his name was never mentioned. What is his name?
Bernard. B-E-R-N-A-R-D.
And his profession?
He's a physician.
And is he 5 years older than you?
Yes.
Also, we're getting near the end. When we reviewed your places of residence since birth, we weren't really sure about some things. And so if you don't mind, in chronological order, could you tell us where you lived?
Well, first at Sherbrooke Street.
Were you born on Sherbrooke Street?
Yeah, thank you. Not in the house, possibly.
I understand.
Lived there till ...1943 or so. I moved to Beechwood Boulevard. 22-27. And the other, I'm sure, but it was 23-24. Sure.
Then,
I was in the Army for a while, and still lived on Sherbrooke when we came back, and then I got married, and I lived for 2 years in Silver Spring, Maryland. After 2 years there, I lived in Cleveland, Ohio. I had lived in Cleveland, Ohio for, I think it was about 2 years before Silver Spring. And after, I was doing a residency, not internship, residency program at Cleveland Clinic. And I was on staff, then I went to the National Institutes of Health. And 2 years there, then went back to Cleveland for 1 year. Then came to Pittsburgh. That was 1954. Lived on Fifth Avenue, 5780. Fifth Avenue. Then, about 3 years almost, 2.5 years. Then moved to here, 5812 Solway. They've lived here about 40 years.
You mentioned that you lived here.
About 4 to 5 months a year.
Where is
now?
Where is
Highland Beach. That's between Boca Raton and Delray Beach. It's on the east coast.
Is Highland H-I-G-H?
Just like it is Highland Park.
Do you recall the year that you entered the service during the Korean War?
Yeah, I was 52.
Okay. And when did you return to after being in at NIH in the case?
I was 52 to 54. That was the times in the Korean War. And then went back for a year in Cleveland. It's the first part of 54 to the end of 54. I guess then we came to Pittsburgh at the end of 1954.
And the last question that we have picked up was Joseph Fisher and Sons Produce. Mm-hmm. Were the sons of your father's brothers?
Yes, sure.
And what were their
names? Well, they would have to be.
Yeah. And what were their names?
God. Alfred and Lewis. L-O-U-I-S.
Okay.
No, it was L-E-W-I-S. I can't really say for sure.
Well, that's the end of ketchup time.
But
we can get on with our lives. Are there any particular events in your family's religious life that you'd like to tell us about?
Family's religious life?
Mm-hmm. Either your family when you were young or else
well,
your family right now with the children.
My brother and I were both in the bachelor, and we went to Hebrew school and went to Sunday school. Those were events. Sometimes terrible.
Were there any, you mentioned something about a get-together, a Seder, I believe.
Yeah, it was no big deal. We'd have Seders regularly, yeah.
They usually officiate.
My mother used to have one of them. My wife would have it, my sister-in-law would have it, they'd all have it.
And so you were the one in charge of the Seder?
Yeah, right here. I was the fastest Seder man in the Midwest.
I'm sure the children didn't mind that at all.
Oh, they loved it. My wife didn't. She had to read all the words.
As you were growing up, were you aware of any anti-Semitism? And if so, could you tell us?
Yeah, I think we were all aware of it, but it wasn't, when you're younger, you're sort of shielded because all of, you live in a Jewish neighborhood and you grew up with Jewish kids, and the only anti-Semitism that you really appreciate in your formative years is the pressure, I think I related to that to you, about the kids that went to Taylor Alderdice from outside. They would periodically, I suspect now that you get more mature and smarter, it's almost like a Russian pogrom, you know, every once in a while they would burst out into something. But that still didn't bother us. College, not really. I didn't appreciate too much anti-Semitism in college, nor in the service. In medical school, a little bit, because you knew you only had a quota of 8 Jews, the rest were Gentiles.
What about with the instructors when you were in medical school?
I don't think I didn't think that. You expected a little bit. Mm-hmm. So you weren't surprised if it happened. And, you know, then you had to just perform, you had to compete, and they got along pretty well. I don't know what they said out of earshot. But I sort of confronted it. You know, I interned at Mercy Hospital. All the nuns, they were all my friends. My brother did the same. Oh yeah, I'm sure there were doctors there that made them choose. But that didn't bother me. I wasn't the kind who was always looking for it. You knew that there were certain prototypes. They were anti-Semitic, although they may have been on the face of things very pleasant, very nice.
I'm surprised you didn't encounter any in the service. Maybe it's because you were in the death.
No, I didn't. It's the same thing. You know that there's a certain group of people that are nice to you, but you wouldn't trust them so much. But the guests we had this weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, lovely Italian couple, a little younger than us, who we befriended in Florida, and we play golf together, and sometimes eat together. I don't care if, you know, if I like them, I don't care if they're anti-Semitic. They're not anti-Semitic to me. My dad also taught me that. You can't fight the world because they say that, oh, this Jew and that Jew is dirty. You fight them when they say, you're a dirty Jew. That's true. I can't carry the weight of the world on my shoulders. I contribute to combat it, and I would, of course, combat it. But you can't carry the weight of the world on your shoulders. I think if everybody takes care of themselves, then collectively it's going to be a better place.
Well, you're fortunate. You were reared in Strongville, too, that you're so much
That's what I say. You're sheltered because you grew up with them. That's really all you intimately know, although I played ball. Little kids, we were 12, 13, 14, up at Alderdice Field, and I told you there were kids from St. Philomena's. There was a good intermix. I'm sure they were taught. Those were the heydays when they taught in the church. But the Jews, you know, were terrible people. They killed Christ, they did this, they did that. But still we play. And you see them on the street today. Some of the ones are still there. Oh, how you doing, this and that. You know, you see them in a high school reunion. You see them in a medical school reunion.
Because we valued each other just for what
you
were.
Well, that's right. It's just, I don't believe. They can have any religion they want or no religion at all. If they treat you all right. It's good.
Well, we're also interested in knowing what activities and organizations, other than in your career, in which you've been interested.
Not really. You mean like civic organizations? No. Too much, too tired working.
What about any sports organizations?
Well, yeah, sports. Such as, I'm in the Western Pennsylvania the Jewish Sports Hall of Fame.
They have a banquet every year. Do you
I did a couple after I was inducted, but I haven't gone.
Oh, you should go this year when my uncles are being inducted.
Who was it, Joe Lewis?
The Barman Twins.
Oh, yeah, that's great. Yeah, I never heard of them.
Well, it's funny, today some elderly woman came up to me in the garden at Road of Shalom, and she told me she was 88 years old, and I asked her if she ever heard of the Barman Twins. She said, oh, everyone my age knew the Barman Twins.
Oh, that's
cute, yeah. Let's see. Have you ever traveled to Israel?
No.
What are your feelings about Israel? Like, it, first of all, perhaps it is a haven for Jews.
Oh, yeah, wonderful. Well, I have great respect for the Israelis. They're a lot, at least they were, big, strong, entirely different than American Jewry. American Jewry, for the most part, in my lifetime, are relatively effete. And always afraid, still afraid, of harming their appearances in front of Gentiles. I still gain the impression that many of them, they want to be Gentile. And I think I told you in the first interview, I don't like people want to be something they aren't, whether it's Jew become Gentile. It's unlikely you find many Gentiles who want to be Jews. Blacks who want to become whites, whites who want to become blacks. I just don't like that. I don't like that. I don't think that's just my feeling. So
you feel the Israelis?
The Israelis stood off. They were biblical to me. Very strong.
Do you still feel that way?
Oh yes. But I think that as years go by, I think they've suffered, just as this country to a certain degree has suffered from over-democratization. And I think that's
by bringing in
there is a certain the DNA strain that came in, and now it's weakened. Yes, it's assimilation leads to a certain degree of decay. We talked about the DNA. That's why the Europeans have no regard for that, because their DNA's worn out. They've been around too long. See? You follow me?
May I ask you a question? Who weakened whom?
Well, I can't tell you.
I mean, which strain weakened?
I don't know.
They started with European
Jews. I'm just
Jews.
Talking in a general.
Okay.
Well,
sort of
European Jews?
Yeah.
Sure, they were the Polish Jews, stuff like the Russian Jews, some of them, Lithuanians, Latvians, mm-hmm. some mm-hmm. German Jews, although German Jews were always regarded themselves as a notch above. Mm-hmm. They were the ones who really started in this country the plea for assimilation. Even to the point where you wondered whether they were Jewish. My reaction. They really preach a false sense of restraint of Jewish personality, which is to some degree very volatile, very excitable, but that's not the Gentile way of reacting. So therefore, you have to tone yourself down so that you'll be acceptable. You can tone yourself down from now to doomsday, and you may not be acceptable, because they know you're a Jew. If they know you're a Jew, you're not going to run away with the bandwagon.
Well, do you think it's because people just don't point to one another and say, well, he's Presbyterian, he's a Methodist, and whatever, and they just take people as they are. And
but to a certain degree, that's correct. Well, that's what I do.
And you don't lose your identity.
Oh, I wouldn't lose. news? No, I mean, you know, I would hide it. I mean, I would hide it.
Well, do you feel that the German Jews that came to the United States were hiding it?
I don't know. They I think they tried to hide it.
I think they became very secularized.
Yes, very, very.
Yes. I think that was what.
Yes.
They wanted to become assimilated into the society. They're the ones who developed. Why did they develop all the community houses? Iron Coffin Settlement, that's German Jews. All those places in New York, they were the masters of the settlement houses. Because these other Europeans, the Eastern Europeans that came over, weren't as polished and finished as they were. They thought that they would be a detriment to their progress. They would be the prototype Jew, and that would interfere with them. So what they did is build these community houses to try to polish these rough stones off.
That was a good idea.
Well, not for the reason that they did it.
To Americanize them.
Well, to Americanize them, maybe, yes. But the reason for Americanizing.
So they wouldn't be ashamed of them.
That's
you missed what you're saying.
You missed the entire point, which is in a book.
This is really
from Ellis Lyle to Abbots Field.
This is really interesting, and I'm very interested. We're interested in what you're saying. But you said that the Israelis stood strong.
Their identity. They were.
That's right.
Everything the American Jew wasn't.
But you also said that you think they've been weakened.
Well, I think now because. You know, they fight now. It's almost like...
You mean the infighting?
Greek families. There would be 10 brothers, 10 restaurants. Huh. You know, I mean, there's just too much infighting. And now a lot of that, of course... see, they're in a bad position. And that causes a little mental unrest. You know, when you have people squeezing you from all parts, and then you have to rely on the United States of America. Let's face it, they don't have the support of the United States, they're gone. So they have to play ball. It's a challenge to them to be exceedingly diplomatic. And I think that they go overboard to certain degrees. I don't know about the peace movement in Israel. That's a two-edged sword.
Very difficult.
And that may have been... an action out of false desperation. They made, you know, a couple guys can ruin a whole situation. Two guys, and if they make a wrong decision, they're wrong. They're not God. They should have waited for God to make that decision.
It's been a long time.
Well, it's okay. They've been restrained. You see my point?
Sure.
Not that. I can't tell them how to run themselves either.
Would you suggest if you could?
What I would have done, I don't think I would have gone for that peace thing. That would have been a slower thing, much slower.
Much more gradual.
And I think they're smart. They could have held them the carrot on a stick to the Arabs. But there was a couple of guys there that, I think that they were, I don't see how people can't change like that. A leopard never changes his spots. That's biology. The basic rule of biology. You ever see a leopard change his spots? Of course not.
I think I've never seen a leopard.
Well,
I know what you mean.
Tiger has strength.
The religious policies that you're aware of in Israel, do you agree with certain ones or not?
I don't know.
For instance,
well, they have a lot of orthodoxy, which...
Right.
To me, there's a paradox. The Orthodox Jews, by and large, are the tough ones. They're the ones that go around shooting people. The Orthodox. This, our country, the Orthodoxy, we used to call those guys tsitsi spinners. They're nothing. You know, they're back in the woodwork. But in Israel, it's different. The Orthodoxy are the ones that go around shooting people. These developments, these settlements. So you have to watch out for fanatical people. It's okay to be religious, but don't be so fanatic. Fanaticism, religious fanaticism, has been the thing that's kept the world
at war.
For property.
That's absolutely true.
That's just pure and simple, two words, religious fanaticism. And it's really, it should be an inner feeling expressed to oneself. You don't have to run around on horses. You know, we should have become more sophisticated from the time of the Crusades. You haven't changed one bit.
In what way?
In the Crusades, the fanaticism, religious. What do you think the Crusades were? It was religious fanaticism.
And you think it's still the same?
Well, sure it is.
All over the world.
Certainly.
Just another crowd doing it.
I think.
Oh, yes.
Well, what are the Arabs? They're fanatic as hell.
What do you think of Arafat? They're asking him to give back, a faction wants him to give back the Nobel Prize.
Well, that's stupid. You should have never had the Nobel Prize. You don't ask people to give back things. See, that's a certain schizophrenia. That's childish. Oh, give me that back, you Indian giver.
You should have thought of that.
We used to call them Indian givers. You don't give it. That's all. I don't have much faith in the Nobel Prize that would give a yo-yo like that. A peace prize, that just denigrates the value of that peace prize. Or the Nobels. The Nobel is crap.
Oh, dear.
I think
we're coming to the end of it. Shall I stop it?
Sure.
Okay.